How's it going? And welcome to episode 167 of On the Wire, proud member of the Picture List Podcast Network. You can follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. I am Kevin Hastings. You can follow me at Hastings Kevin. Adam Howe can be followed at 80 grade, all spelled out. Adam is off this week, but fear not, Lou Landers has been gracious enough to join us. You know Lou from his work with Dr. Roto, Sirius XM. He's probably got quite a few other things going on. He's a busy guy, especially with football coming up. He does football as well. But before we get into news and notes for the week, Lou, how you doing, man? It's so good to see you.
It's great to see you, Kevin, and it's great to be here on the Wire Pod. I'm doing great, super busy, as you mentioned, with all my work at DrO.com, where I'm the content director, the baseball content director. I've actually just started as the managing editor there as well, so that's given me a lot more to work with. Yeah, and I'm also doing weekly, or I should say daily, every week, Monday through Friday, I'm doing MLB props with our partners at RT Sports as well.
Very cool. Well, let's dive right into some of this, Lou, because there's a lot of news and notes this week, and I even tried to abbreviate them a little bit, try to keep them more fantasy relevant for 15 team mixed leagues and on down, but there's a lot. And so let's start off right away. Michael Conforto activated from the 10-day IL in San Francisco. We know he's going right back in the lineup, but who's going to lose on time here? And is there anything that you see, you know, actionable with the return of Conforto?
Honestly, no. I don't think anyone of importance is going to lose so much playing time because there's a lot of other players on the IL for the Giants right now. And those who roster Conforto, good news. You get him back, slotted right into the middle of the Giants lineup, and hopefully producing some RBIs for you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Not much to worry about. The other IL moves have taken care of that for us. Also in San Francisco, Blake Snell to the 15-day IL. Now, this could, well, definitely will mean an opportunity for somebody. Who do you think that might be, and is there interest there?
So maybe Spencer Howard, who was kind of a big deal years ago, but really didn't pan out into anything. But I do think he could get an opportunity to start here. I just don't trust him, though. He has just never been good. He's never been reliable. And although it's nice to like pitchers when they pitch in San Francisco because it's relatively pitcher-friendly place, he just hasn't proven himself to me. Certainly worth keeping an eye on, though.
Yeah, Spencer Howard never really lived up to the hype. I remember seeing him in 2019 in the Arizona Fall League. And it was one of those instances where I didn't know that he had come into the game and was pitching. And then after a couple of pitches, like, oh, who's this guy? Who is this? He just looked awesome and heads and shoulders above the other players on the field, and unfortunately it has not transferred to the MLB level. That is for certain. Let's move on to Brandon Marsh heading to the IL in Philadelphia. David Dahl was the corresponding move here, and he's come out of the gates showing us a little bit. Did we give up on David Dahl too soon? Is he someone you have interest in?
So I don't know if we gave up too soon. He's just never healthy. But when he is healthy, he's always been pretty good, right? Just really bad injury history. And you got to love the Phillies lineup. They're great. There's going to be opportunity just because the lineup keeps turning over and turning over. So anyone in that lineup is worth taking a flyer on because you want to have pieces of that team.
Yeah, absolutely. Since his call up, Philadelphia had three games, all versus left-handed starters, and he started two of the three versus lefties as a lefty, which leads me to believe that we will definitely see him versus righties. And if he's going to play two out of three versus lefties as well, there could be quite a bit of playing time, at least until a Brandon Marsh return. So we should have David Dahl available to us for at least a little while.
Yeah, that's very telling and a great point, because you would think maybe he's only going to play against the righties. So the fact that he's gone in against two lefties, definitely good moving forward, helps us try to figure some things out there.
Yeah, that's what caught my eye, because sometimes we'll see these guys get thrown in the game the first or second game after their call up, even if it's the wrong side of the platoon where they would ideally like them. But the fact that they let him play two in a row versus lefties, that really caught my eye. Edward Julian in Minnesota was optioned this week. I had been using him in a couple of deep leagues as a middle infielder, and I was caught a little off guard, not a whole lot, but a little bit here. Is this just due to us getting Royce Lewis back, or do you think there's more to be looking at here with the Minnesota lineup?
I think there's more to it. Of course, Royce Lewis coming back meant someone was going to lose an opportunity to play regularly, but he struggled a lot, Julian, a lot more than anyone could have expected, because I liked him a lot coming into the season. And I do think he can right the ship in the minors. I would try to hold on to him in leagues where I roster him. It's one of those situations, Kevin, where if you cut him, and in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, let's say he gets hot and gets called back up, people are going to spend tons of fab on him, and you're going to be kicking yourself. Firstly, I had this guy. Now if I want him back, I'm going to have to blow fab they don't want to have to spend. So he's one of those guys I would try to hold on to, even though he is down right now and there was a lot of struggles.
Yeah, I'm going to hold him for a little bit and see if this is a quick turnaround here. It's been nice. He's very streaky. As you said, he was struggling at times, but he had a couple of hot weeks that even included multiple stolen bases that I wasn't necessarily expecting out of him. So I was happy with what I was getting out of him in spite of those struggles. So I agree. Holding for a little while here, hoping for a quick return. Another player that some are probably hoping for a quick return is Spencer Torkelson, optioned for Detroit, and they called up Justin Henry Molloy. Is this a one-for-one move here in Detroit? Are you interested in Molloy? And similar to Edward Julian, are you holding Spencer Torkelson for a little bit?
I will try to hold Torkelson a little bit. It's a little more difficult, because at least Julian was chipping in those steals, as you mentioned. Torque's not going to do that, even if he is hitting. And obviously what he was doing was incredibly underwhelming so far. Molloy is interesting in deeper leagues for sure, but with the Tigers lineup being really bad and super inconsistent, I just don't think he has much value. I also don't know how long he's going to be in the big leagues for, especially if he struggles. And you don't want to start spending any sizable amount of fab that half the guy gets sent down.
Yeah, interesting here. Similar to what we were talking about earlier, Justin Henry Molloy has been in the lineup as a designated hitter all three games since his call-up, all versus right-handed starters, and there was thought that he might be a short-side platoon guy. So at least in the short term, it appears he is an everyday bat in this lineup for right now. But I feel I agree with you, and I think the fact that Justin Henry Molloy is a name we've been following for 3-4 years now, that his price is going to be higher than it should be in FAB this Sunday. How do you feel on what the bids might look like for Molloy?
I think you're right about that, and that's kind of why I'm staying away. I do think that he'll be overpriced, and because I don't think he can necessarily stick in the big leagues, especially if Torkelson gets hot, I just don't want to spend money on a player like that. And there's another player I'd love to talk about in a kind of a similar situation, but Connor Norby with the Orioles. He got called up because Mateo went on the IL, right? It's great Norby's getting a chance, but can you really drop big money on him? Because his time in the majors is likely short-lived too. Mateo could come back. I mean, the Orioles have a lot of young players they could call up. If Norby doesn't hit right away, his leash is going to be really shortened. I just don't want to spend on guys who I think can't stick in the big leagues or won't stick in the big leagues.
Right, and we just saw this with Baltimore, with Heston Kjerstad, and unless we hear something is going to be more long-term or they decide to go another direction with Jorge Mateo, unless we hear of a setback from this concussion IL or it's going to linger, I don't think I have any interest at all in Norby on Sunday night. I agree with you 100% there.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, Kevin, where we see it all the time. We get really excited about a player getting called up, whether they've been hyped for a long time or not, and people spend a lot of fab. And sometimes it works out, but I feel like a lot of the time it doesn't because that player is not up for a long time, and especially in the NFBC formats. Then you have this player who you spent a bunch of fab on, who is now on your bench and not even being able to be used on a lineup switch on Friday because he's back in the minors. And suddenly you need to make another move, spend more fab, and you've already spent fab you didn't want to spend. It's just, it becomes a vicious cycle that you just don't want to be involved in.
Absolutely. I've talked many times over the past couple of seasons that one of the hardest things, or it wasn't hard to learn, it took me a long time to realize that I really need to pay a lot more attention to what I'm going to have available to me on Friday when I can change those NFBC lineups, when I'm setting up my fab the previous Sunday. So that is a great, great point that, you know, picking somebody up in fab on Sunday might already be sent back down before that lineup change comes on Friday and you're stuck with someone that probably isn't even playing. In that case, they definitely wouldn't be playing, but there are other scenarios as well where you just have empty spots that you can't use for the weekend. Great, great point. Trevor Williams, I don't think anybody expected to see out of Trevor Williams what we were seeing. The underlying metrics don't really support the results we were getting, but for our fantasy teams, the results are all that matters. Sometimes we don't have to be able to explain something to ride out a hot streak. But will you have interest in Trevor Williams when he returns, or do you have any interest in someone that might be filling in?
I don't really have interest in him when he returned. I was one of those people that just stayed away waiting for the wheels to fall off. And obviously they didn't. He now is injured. Who knows where you're going to get when he comes back. It looks like DJ Hirsch is going to get an opportunity in the rotation for the Nationals. And I don't know a ton about him, but while trying to dive a little bit, solid K per nine the past couple of years in the minor league. So we like that as fantasy players for sure. But I think unless you're really desperate for starting pitcher in the deepest of leagues, I'm not looking to add him. I certainly want to see what he can do in the rotation before pulling a trigger. I'm staying away basically from him, and I still want nothing to do with Trevor Williams. I just do think the wheels are going to fall off at some point.
The great thing about DJ Hirsch is we will get to see him on Sunday versus Atlanta, who's been underperforming as a team much of the season, still winning baseball games, but the lineup and individual players not performing as we expected. So we get to see hers versus Atlanta on Sunday. If we like what we see, he gets Miami next weekend. So depending on how he performs on Sunday, we could see some a little higher bids, I think, than most people would expect on hers for that Miami start next week.
I think you're right about that. And it's good and bad that we get to see him on Sunday. Good in the sense that, okay, you get a little bit of a sample, bad in the sense that he might have flown under the radar if he wasn't starting until next week. Now, if he has that great start, you're going to see bids that probably shouldn't be made, but will be made.
You know what I want to see? I want to see a performance similar to what we saw out of Pablo Lopez versus the Yankees on Thursday. His stuff was there, but he still gave up a ton of runs. I want to see him pitching well, but I want the stat line to look horrible.
I feel you. I think that would be best case scenario.
All right. Victor Robles has signed an MLB contract, major league contract, with the Seattle Mariners. It appears he will probably be on the short side of a platoon. Seattle does face three lefties this coming week. You have any interest in Victor Robles on teams where you're a little light in the stolen base category?
Not particularly. Yeah, he's going to be on the short side of the platoon, but I really just kind of look at him as depth. Not going to play regularly, obviously. I'm really not interested.
Gotcha there. Yeah, it's tough. Some of these stolen base guys, I don't mind streaming in leagues where I am comfortable in my other categories. Even guys that I think are going to get opportunities as a pinch runner late in game. Sometimes that can even be better if less at bats when they're low batting average guys. But that is the way that I would be using Victor Robles if I am interested at all. I wouldn't be counting on him for anything other than the stolen bases. In Pittsburgh, we got three guys back. Henry Davis is back up. He was hitting the snot out of the ball down in the minors. Jack Suwinski, a quick turnaround. He's back. We know how streaky he can be. And then we have Leover Peguero as well back with the Pirates. Any of these guys give you interest let's keep it to our redraft leagues, because these are some young players that probably all have some keeper and dynasty intrigue. But what about our redraft leagues? Any of these guys you like going forward or for even the next couple of weeks?
Davis and Suwinski are certainly interesting to me. Davis with the catcher eligibility even more. So he's got lots of potential, and as you alluded to, he's been hitting the ball really well. So I'd like to see him back, what he can do. And Suwinski's got legit power. We know he can hit the long ball and is traditionally hit well against right-handed pitching. So I'm adding both of them if they're available, and I'm looking for a second catcher in a league, or I'm looking for an outfielder due to injuries. So definitely. I mean, I'm holding my breath on Juan Soto in a couple places right now.
Right.
Not that Suwinski can replace Juan Soto, but if I were to lose Soto for a while, I'm going to be looking for an outfielder on the wire. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are recording on Friday afternoon. So as far as Lou and I at this moment, we're waiting on news on Juan Soto. Jack Suwinski, we know how streaky he can be. He can give you four home runs and three stolen bases in a week. He can give you zeros across the board for a week and just about anywhere in between. But this is a little surprising to me, not a lot, because he's not somebody many teams would hold on to for a long term. But with this quick of a turnaround, I thought he might have been held a little more. He is only 9% rostered in 15 team main events on the NFBC format, so available almost everywhere. Probably a popular ad this week. We alluded to Royce Lewis earlier being back in Minnesota, talked a little bit about the other guys in the lineup. I don't think there's much more to add on Lewis. Obviously, he's rostered everywhere. He's been spectacular every time we've seen him healthy. Anything to add on Royce Lewis other than he's just fun to watch?
Not really. Obviously, he could be a top 15 hitter if he's healthy. Needs to remain healthy, and playing time, I don't think it changes. Julian sent down. Twins just going to shift around their infield a little bit.
Perfect. Couple of moves in Boston. Wyler Abreu went to the IL, but they did get Tyler O'Neill back. Tyler O'Neill started off the season extremely hot. And for those of us like myself that were excited to see what he could do in Boston when healthy, he came out of the gates and even exceeded my hopes. He really cooled off prior to hitting the IL. What do you expect to see from him now that he's back?
I'm not sure what I'm expecting to see from him, but I'm hoping that he kind of gets hot again and goes on. It's like a brand new, fresh start. So it's hot again.
You were in as well in the offseason. During draft season, you were in a title.
I was because I thought that Boston was probably the most perfect place for a right-handed power hitter because of Fenway Park.
That hits high fly balls, yes.
Yeah, right? It was just one of those things. And yeah, he looked great. And of course, in terms of the situation with Abreu going to the IL, one just replaces the other for now.
Yeah, that's how I see it as well. A definite pickup where he was dropped in my book. Is Zach Eflin a definite pickup where he may have been let go? I don't think he was in many places, but if he was dropped, do you have interest? Because he is one of, as much as offense has been down, some pitchers that we had high expectations for are giving up a lot of runs on the season. It's weird. We're getting really good performances from guys we drafted late. Some of the guys we drafted early were not being so nice to our teams. So what do you see from Zach Eflin going forward?
If he were to be available in leagues, I would definitely be looking to add him, and I'm hoping that he can regain some of that form from last year. He's been really similar to the situation with Aaron Civale, who is a guy I have a lot of. And if you're still rostering Civale, there's no reason to not roster Eflin too. One thing that is definite about Eflin being back is Rays won't be using an opener, it looks like, at least for the time being, because they have that full five-man rotation again. So that is something to keep an eye on, because I know there are people who like to either stream openers or maybe stream guys who are following the opener. The Rays won't be offering you that, at least for the time being.
Yeah, and pretty tough landing spot. He'll get the Cubs at home and then to Atlanta for a two-step coming back this week. I'm a little surprised. It doesn't surprise me at all that he's 100% rostered still in 15-team leagues. I am slightly surprised that absolutely nobody dropped him in the 12-team online championships either, but I didn't expect there to be much availability. Thought he might be available in a couple of leagues, but everybody held on. Everybody was hopeful. I shouldn't say everybody. I'm sure there were some people that were not as interested, but a lot of us went crazy when Luis Matos had his 16 RBI week and was not available to us in NFBC formats yet for that week, and really cooled off. He's been sent down now by the Giants as Austin Slater returns. This was a worry for some. So Casey Bubba, big Giants fan, he's talked about this, that he thought this might be the case all along, that as soon as Slater come back, Matos would be sent back down. Typically, we see Austin Slater versus lefties. Is that the only scenario that you have interest when there's a heavy left-handed lineup coming up for the Giants?
Yeah, and a few things here. So I was one of the few people who was not in on Matos either. And when on Sirius with Dr. Roto on Sundays, Matos' name came up because of that huge week. And I said, listen, Doc, this guy did this last year too. Maybe not to the same extent, but he came up last year, was really tearing it up for about 7 to 10 days and just fell off the face of the earth after. I wasn't talking about it being the Slater return to do it, but I was saying stay away, don't get sucked into this guy. And lo and behold, I mean, there's people who spent 100 fab, and goes to say what we were talking about earlier, you spend money on a guy, there's no sure thing he's going to stay up, and it really is money wasted. And with Slater, yeah, I like him in deep daily leagues, but that's really it. He's not a shallow league guy. Yeah. He's not a shallow league guy, exactly. Daily leagues or DFS, you can get him cheap in DFS against lefties. And if you are looking for players in the deeper leagues, if he's in the lineup, he's worth playing. Otherwise, your deeper weekly leagues, let him stay on the wire.
Yep, I agree. We are going to head up to Milwaukee. Just a couple more of these notes. I told you we had a lot of them out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. There really is a lot.
Yeah, tons. And I actually filtered through them and left some out. I know we've talked about a couple of guys that don't really affect our fantasy teams too much, but I tried to avoid most of that news, and we still have a ton here. And up in Milwaukee, over the past couple of seasons, there's been a lot of excitement for Aaron Ashby, and we've seen a couple of flashes when he was healthy of what we kind of hope to see from him. With Robert Gasser heading to the IL, we're seeing Aaron Ashby get another chance here in the Milwaukee rotation. So are you interested? Looks like he's set to face Toronto on Tuesday here for his first start.
I don't mind that matchup against Toronto, but I've been burned by Ashby enough at this point where, no, I'm just not interested. I know there's still hype around him, and at some point he could figure it out, and maybe it will be this time. And if it happens, kudos to those who are going to bid on him. But I haven't been impressed at all in the majors by him. And until I see him impress me, I'm going to stay away.
I've been the same way. I've been one of the low guys on Aaron Ashby the past couple of seasons. It's not that I really have a lot of negative thoughts. It's just others like him more than I do, so I don't end up with him anywhere. We're agreeing way too much here, Lou, and I know that's usually the case. We think a lot alike when it comes to fantasy baseball, but so far we've agreed on just about everything here. I am curious to hear if you have any interest in what may become of Colorado's lineup with both Sean Bouchard and Chris Bryant hitting the IL this week.
Well, I feel like at this point, it's really only news when Chris Bryant isn't on the IL. Let's be real. Right. In terms of the impact of these moves, though, maybe Jake Cave see some at bats, Toglia some at bats, Hunter Goodman some more at bats. I'm not really that excited about any of it, though. And I almost wish that you went first so that no matter what you said, I could have said the opposite just for the sake of being different. But something tells me you're kind of going to be in the same boat as me.
Yeah, for the most part, I am intrigued with Jake Cave in deeper leagues. I mean, I used him in spots last season. If I can use him when he's in the Washington Nationals lineup, I can use him when he's in Colorado's lineup at home. For certain.
In course, yeah, in course. Any of those guys I mentioned with Cave, Toglia, and Goodman do have some relevance when they're in course field.
Right, yep. So we agree again for the most part. And I left the biggest name for last, and we did get to see him yesterday, Cade Povich getting the call by Baltimore. Maybe one of the higher bids of the week in a lot of leagues coming up this Sunday. What interest do you have, if any, in Cade Povich?
Well, the fact that he pitches for an elite team, that's the type of pitcher I want because of wins, certainly. I do think the bidding might take a little bit of a hit because he wasn't good yesterday. And it was against the Blue Jays team that, let's be real, has really underwhelmed offensively. They've been a mess for most of the season offensively. So it was somewhat of an easier matchup for him, and he still struggled. We can maybe chalk it up to nerves, though. We never know what we're going to get when a guy kind of makes that first start in the majors. I do think he has good stuff, and I do like the team, as I mentioned. So, yeah, I'm going to bid on him, but it might just be more of a I'll place a bid, and if I get him, great. I want to make sure that someone has to bid more than whatever I feel comfortable bidding. So I'm not going to bid a lot, but I'll place bids to be competitive.
Yeah, this is a situation I think that like we were talking earlier in the show. I think he pitched better than what his stat line shows us on Thursday. So hopefully that keeps the bids down, because this is the type of player for me, Lou. I say it all the time. I tell Adam almost on a weekly basis about somebody. I'll have my bids in on him, but I don't expect to roster him Monday morning. I'm pretty conservative with my bidding amounts. I try to be aggressive more in the timing and trying to be early on guys. So this is a guy I usually miss out on, but I wouldn't be surprised if he sneaks through to me on a team or two this week because of that stat line. In spite of, I think his stuff looked pretty good.
Yeah, and it's a good point. Is there are people who don't watch as many games as they do just check box scores, and you can miss something like that. You can miss that, you know, fastball command was sharp, good breaking ball, but made a couple mistakes. Or you can see a really good stat line, the opposite side of things. Maybe he actually doesn't look very good and the command wasn't there and he got kind of lucky and the stats were better than they should have been. So watching the games is a big part of this too. So it's a good point you make. And I do think he could be helpful. I don't know if I'm going to be the one to win the bids.
I agree 100% once again, Lou. That's going to wrap it up. There's probably a ton more, and we've talked about that a couple of times, and some of them may be fantasy relevant. So to keep up on all the news of the day, make sure you're listening to Nick Pollock's Plus Pitch podcast, which highlights every starting pitcher performance from the day prior, and also the First Pitch podcast with Casey Bubba on weekday mornings and Jake Crumpler on the weekends, which breaks down the news, highlights, and observations from every day's games, as well as looking ahead at that day's slate. And they get it all done in about 15 minutes each morning. I wake up every morning to welcome to the First Pitch podcast. And I know those of you that listen know exactly what I'm talking about. So that's the first thing I do each and every morning. So we're going to dive into a focus topic, really brief one this week, but you're the perfect person that I wanted to inquire about this, Lou, and we'll do that right after this quick break. All right, we are back. And of course, you are listening to On the Wire. I am Kevin Hastings, joined this week by Lou Landers. And Lou, you are actually a commissioner for a dynasty league that I am a part of. So I thought we allude to our dynasty teams once in a while here on the show, even though our main focus is for the weekly fab in our redraft leagues. But I was wondering, is there any tips or pieces of advice that you may have for those in dynasty leagues that are a little different, things you may not consider when it's a redraft league, as far as fab goes for our dynasty leagues?
Well, the first thing I always want to know about my dynasty leagues is, can you trade for fab? Is that an option? Whether you are trading picks, players, whatever it might be, can you trade for fab? Because that changes everything, Kevin. You start with your 1,000 or your 500 or your 100, whatever it is for your league. And if you can replenish that at any time with trades, it's something you need to keep an eye on and something you absolutely should be doing if you're one of the contenders. I play in a lot of dynasty leagues. As you mentioned, I'm commissioner of one. And where I'm good, where my teams are good, I'm always looking for more fab, always, because you always want to be A, churning over different players at different times, or you want to be able to spend and bid on these young players who fly up prospect rankings who weren't even on the radar in the preseason. And in order to do that, you need to be able to spend big while also still having fab for later so that you can get your players in August and September when you're fighting for each point, even half points in the standings. So being able to trade for Fab is huge. I would say be aggressive on those young types of players who are flying up through the rankings, because even if they're not going to make your roster, they became good trade bait for you, right? And if you are towards the top of your league, your picks aren't going to be that high, right? They're not going to be great picks. Obviously, you want your first, second, and third for big-time trades. But if you can start moving fourth to eighth rounders, let's say some leagues have 10 rounds, the league you alluded to, we have 10 rounds, trade those picks for Fab. Someone who's in the bottom of standings is going to want as many picks as possible, and they really don't need their Fab. They kind of check out. They stop. I've gotten like 400 or 500 Fab for a fifth and sixth round pick. It's basically like getting all my Fab right back, and it really is helpful. So I really do suggest keeping an eye on who's making a lot of moves, who has a lot of Fab available, who wants draft picks, knowing your league mates, knowing who's doing what, who's active, who's not active, and spending Fab and acquiring it throughout the season. You don't just have to do it once. Do it every month or so. Do it every couple months or so. Just get it done. Fab is so important, even more in the Dynasty Leagues, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I love that you started that answer with your first question, right? Knowing the rules. I think that's a lot of why we don't talk a whole lot or as much as maybe we could about Dynasty Leagues, for the same reason we don't talk a lot about points leagues. Every league is different. You can't just talk about this is what I would do in a dynasty league, because from league to league, it may not be what you would do, because so many of them are so different. That
I will say, Kevin, that in the dynasty leagues that I play in, certainly all my baseball ones and even the majority of my fantasy football ones, Fab is tradable. It wasn't always that way when they started, but it's been something that's been added because it has become such an interesting thing. I mean, I've traded Fab for a starting pitcher, like a 36, 37 year old starting pitcher that had no use on a bad team. I needed an arm. I didn't have picks. I said, here, take 100 Fab. I need this arm. Go get yourself a flyer prospect or something. Like, it works both ways. It's not just the good teams who always need it. So Fab can be an asset, just like picks and or prospects and or veteran players.
I love the note you added here to the rundown, Lou, about dynasty leagues, and this is going to be fascinating. We could do an entire show on this question that you put in here, but I'm going to throw it right back to you first. What is your thought on teams tanking at this point in the season? Already know they're going to finish it towards the bottom, and so they go trading for picks and prospects from the top tier teams. How do you feel about teams just completely tanking 2 months into the season?
So this is one of those topics that I love because everyone has a different opinion. Even when you agree, you don't necessarily agree on all aspects of it. So for me, I can give you a good example because I'm not doing well in all my dynasty leagues. I'm doing quite poorly in one of them. I was great for a while. I'm in a rebuild. First 2 months of the season, I started all my best players. I'm still in the bottom three. So at this point, I'm thinking, why do I want to finish in the bottom three or four when I can maybe finish dead last? That pick, whether I use it or not to draft a player, has a lot of value come rookie draft time. In fact, in this same league, that number one pick this year was traded in a deal for Julio Rodriguez. Wasn't one for one, but it's a big asset. If you can get it, you want it, right? So I do think tanking is okay, but there's a limit to it. For instance, in this league, the rule is you cannot start players in your active roster that have never played in Major League Baseball. You can't just throw anybody in there. They can be injured even, but they have to have played in the big leagues before. So to me, that is a form of tanking that is clearly still tanking, but you're not using players who have never been in the big leagues. If you have big league players on your roster, whether they're hurt, whether they play once a week, whatever it might be, plug them in at a certain point. Right from the get-go, no. because I think you really, you owe the league at least enough for those first couple months to play your best players. At a certain point, dynasty leagues, everyone has a different goal, right, Kevin? If you're at the top of the league, where in the league we've been talking about, you are. You're not trying to tank. You're trying to get as many awesome players as possible. And you're going to benefit from teams that are starting to tank too, because they'll go down, you can go up in those categories. On the other hand, the teams that are not doing well, they have to look for their future. They may not be competing for a championship this year, but they have to do whatever they can to get a competitive advantage moving forward. And if that means not playing your best players and getting a better draft pick to compete in the future, more power to you. You have to do what you have to do to compete to be the best, whether it be now or in the future. So if you want to get better in the future and tanking is going to get you a better pick and ultimately better players, go for it. Just don't do it in a way that is using minor leaguers that have never played in the league in your roster, because to me, that's kind of overstepping it. But again, if your league allows for that, you could do that too. So it really just depends on the league rules.
That is the biggest thing for me. I'm a big rules guy. I think that if our league constitutions were foolproof, there'd be no need for commissioners of fantasy leagues, right? So our rules aren't, and that's why our commissioners exist. But I think it has to be something really egregious for a commissioner to step in. And I am specifically talking about tanking trades here, because
That's a whole
team that's doing the tanking. If they're following the rules, if everything they're doing is following the rules, I understand other top teams don't like some of the deals that a top team can get sent through, right? I understand that. But it's not them you're punishing. It's the team at the bottom that's trying to rebuild. That's the team you're punishing. And if they're following the rules, I don't think you can stop them from making those moves.
I've only vetoed one trade ever in all my years as commissioner, and it was the first year of a dynasty league where people just went nuts over a Clayton Kershaw trade. I'm not sure why they went so nuts, but they happened to go nuts over it. And because it was the first year and people didn't really know each other so well, and I was the one acquiring Kershaw as the commissioner, I just felt this is going to get messy because I'm the commissioner too. I did what I thought was best for everyone involved, and I vetoed it. Otherwise, I've never done it. And the biggest thing is this, Kevin. Let's say you and I, we're in a dynasty league together and you're doing very well, and it's a league where I'm looking to tank. I have a lot of quality pitchers. If I could trade you Camilo Doval, Framber Valdez, Nick Lodolo, and maybe a speed guy to help boost you, keep you up top, and you were to give me a first-round pick and the one prospect on your team that I will not make a trade without, even though it seems like it's a little lopsided because you're getting all this star power stuff, I'm getting what I need. So to me, as long as the team that is giving up all the name brand players is getting what they think they need, the trade's fine. And no one should be making a trade unless they're happy with that trade. So who is anyone else in the league or even the commissioner to step in and say, no, I can't allow this trade? People pay to play. Once you've paid to play, it's your team. You run it how you want. I'm not here to tell you how to run your team. I'm just here to make sure that things go relatively smoothly and people follow the rules.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think if you're a team near the top of a dynasty league and you are the type of person that will be upset when one of your competitors makes that deal, then you should be on the phone now trying to make that deal yourself first. Yeah. That's how,
or hit up the other owners. There's always right. At least two or three bad teams in dynasty. It's never even. When there's really good teams, there's really bad teams. There's always at least three, sometimes four or five, that just want future stuff. So offer it to them.
Absolutely. Well, Lou, I said this was going to be a brief conversation. about something we could talk an entire show on. And we did go several minutes there. So let's end our dynasty talk there. What we like to do here at On the Wire, Lou, is give everybody their reminder of where they can find you, where they can find your work here in the middle of the show, rather than waiting till the end where people may not hear it.
All right. Makes sense. Very smart. Kind of like coming back from break on the radio, right? So I like it. Well, Lou Landers, you can find me at Landers Talks on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it nowadays. I just call it Elon. And basically, most of my work can be found at drroto.com, where I am the MLB content director. You can find my daily prop articles at RT Sports. I'm on Sirius XM every Sunday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern with Dr. Roto. Mostly fantasy baseball, DFS, and props, but I am also a football guy. I'm a multi-sport guy, and sometimes I get typecast as a baseball guy, but I do just as much football as I do baseball. So if you're looking for someone to follow who can help you in both of those sports, I might be your guy.
That is definitely the case for me, Lou, as I do play in a couple of fantasy football leagues, but I do not pay nearly as much attention to football as baseball. So you are one of my go-tos for said fantasy football leagues. Let's get into some players that we recommend for this week's Fab run on Sunday for many of us. We go category by category here. Let's start off with somebody that may help us with some power, home runs, and RBI categories, Lou. Who are you looking at this week?
So I like Helio Ramos with the Giants. He's been playing every day, and he's really earned it. 304, 12 runs, 5 homers, 19 RBIs, and 92 at-bats this season. And one of the most telling things to me is, although he's hit better than Matos, the Giants could have kept Matos over Ramos if they chose to. They chose Ramos. That's telling. And for me, he's going to be playing every day. And as long as he's hitting this well, he needs to be rostered. He needs to be in your starting lineups.
Yeah, I agree. And he's actually got some availability in 15-team leagues. In the main event, he is 84% rostered, or 86% rostered. So he's available in a handful of leagues. Wide availability when you drop down to the 12-team online championships, and those are 5 outfielder leagues, 12-team leagues, where he's only 27%. So quite a bit of availability in the 12-teamers. I expect that number to approach what the main event number is, and the main event number probably go to 100% rostered this week, as that 16 RBI week from Matos was really hard to ignore. Elliot Ramos came up at the same time and has been performing well. As you said, he's the guy the team is going to stick with here.
I want consistency, Kev. That's my biggest thing. Is
right.
Almost any professional player can have a crazy good week. It happens all the time. Like those guys that hit 4 home runs in the first 10 games of the season, and then the season was 6, you know? It happens too. It's the consistencies. Those guys that are producing on a daily or semi-daily basis that I'm more interested
in. Yeah, absolutely. And he's not going to hit over 300 with that strikeout rate, but we know that. And what's really cool is he moves to the top of the lineup versus lefties, but stays in the lineup versus righties. So we do get the extra plate appearances out of him when lefty is on the mound. I was a little surprised. I have a guy with similar rostership percentages as you, and it surprised me a little bit. I know he's not the all-star that he was at one time, but Mitch Haniger has been hitting his home runs here and there, and he's 84% rostered. He's more rostered in the 12-teamers, a little over half, 54%. So not as available in the 12-teamers, but about the same availability in the deeper leagues. And he's somebody that Adam likes to say, always check. It only takes a second. He's somebody that, as I'm preparing my fab this week, I'm going to check and see if he's available. You have any interest in Mitch Haniger
I do. I liked him coming into the season too. Going back to Seattle, primarily, I figured he'd be DHing. He's played a little more outfield, if I'm not mistaken, than I would have expected. Started off good, cooled down, had a really nice hit streak last week. Ended, but if he could start to come around again, as it looks like he might be, definitely has pop. There's no question about that, and really shouldn't cost you that much in FAB either. So definitely a guy I do like. And not surprised about that 12-team versus 15 ownership, because he was a guy people probably picked up early on and have just kind of held on to. Haven't had a need to cut him yet.
Yeah, and that's a great point. With the places where he is available, he's the teams that want him have him already, for the most part, I would say. So in spite of having a high rostership percentage, the places he is available, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be really expensive. I love that point. And, you know, all the projection systems, the publicly available ones on FanGraphs, have him projected for double digit home runs the rest of season, even though he only has 6 so far.
As I can see him ending with 24 or 25.
Right. Right.
Absolutely. He could hit 16 or 17 the rest of the way.
And the big thing to me that I think we forget about sometimes when we're out here looking for our home runs, and we do say we're also looking for RBI when we talk about this category, but the runs and RBI as well, projected for 35 to 40 of each the rest of the way. I think we overlook that sometimes when we're looking specifically for our home runs and stolen bases as well.
Definitely.
How about some speed? I love the name you have here. It's been a while since we talked about him, and he's going fairly nuts again on the base paths. We've seen this from him before, and he's already paying off for those that have added him over the past few weeks.
Yeah, I added him 2 weeks ago, and I haven't even really been using him because I have a lot of outfield depth. But with all the injuries that happen, I figure at some point I might need this guy. And playing regularly, Jake McCarthy, I don't think we even mentioned the name. We just started talking about it. Right? Jake McCarthy with the Diamondbacks. He's playing regularly, and I think that's the biggest thing. Everyone knows that he's had big speed, but he wasn't really playing. And if he's not playing, then you have another Victor Robles type situation where it's like, well, if he plays, he might steal me a bag. But now that he's playing, he's definitely a threat to steal a lot of bases. He's got 9 on the season, which is pretty good considering the amount he's played. Stolen, I believe, 23 or more in each of the past 2 seasons. So you should expect to see another 17 to 20 stolen bases the rest of the way, maybe more if he actually continues to play regularly. Don't expect any power, but you're going to get your speed. If that's what you're looking for, Jake McCarthy's a guy.
Yep, absolutely. He's available in a quarter of the 15-team main events and many more 12-team leagues, only 7% rostered in 12-team RotoWire online championship. So widely available there if you are in need of stolen bases. My speed guy is very specific. Taylor Walls, his rehab assignment has been moved to AAA. We expect to see him back soon. It's not that I'm really excited about Taylor Walls. I'm higher on him than many fantasy players. I do think he can be very valuable in the speed department in spite of low batting averages and not a whole lot of power. But this move is specific to those that have been reaping the benefits of rostering Caballero so far this season, because I don't know that Taylor Walls is sliding right back into shortstop. We haven't been told that, to my knowledge. But if he does, Caballero's playing time is probably diminished rather drastically. So this is kind of an insurance policy that's not going to cost you more than a buck, even in a $1,000 fab league at the moment, because if you lose Caballero, he's the one that's going to slide right in and run just as much, if not more, probably.
Yeah, those are all really good points. And I think one of the biggest things, kind of to piggyback off your $1 situation, if you pick him up now before he's activated, you're going to pay a lot less. That's just the way it works. Better to be the week early than the week late, right? So that's a big thing with Walls. Another thing is, because he does run the bases well and because he is a really good glove at multiple positions in the infield, even if he doesn't start a game, he can be used as a pinch runner, defensive replacement, and get his opportunities to run the bases without necessarily killing the batting average either. Even if he doesn't play instead of Caballero or instead of Paredes, who we shouldn't be obviously praised as great or low or whoever it might be there, he's going to get opportunities because he's versatile and because he's a good athlete and because he runs the base as well. So I do like a guy like Walls for sure. If you're looking purely for stolen bases, he had 20 plus last year, if that means anything.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our opportunity category. And this is the guys that might have good matchups for the week, that we see an increase in playing time coming up. It can have to do with the team schedule. So really quick, we do have 8 teams lined up for a 7-game week coming up. Baltimore, the New York Yankees, Tampa, Chicago White Sox, Kansas City, Minnesota, Oakland, Seattle. All American League teams that have a 7-game week coming up. Only 2 with the dreaded 5-game week. That is Cleveland and Cincinnati. We typically check in on where Colorado and Cincinnati will be playing. Colorado is split first 3 of the week at Minnesota and then back home for 3 versus Pittsburgh. And Cincinnati, one of those dreaded 5-game weeks, only 2 of those 5 games in Great America Small Park, those against Cleveland, and then they are at Milwaukee for 3. So with all of that and other things you may have considered, Lou, who do you think has a good opportunity coming up this week?
So my guy's not really based on scheduling as much as just in general. It's Gio Urshela. I know he's super boring, but he plays every day. He's consistent. That's something I told you I like a lot. Eligible at both first and third base, which can be helpful. And in roto leagues especially, always want to maximize your number of at-bats every week, right? So when you have a player who's playing regularly, it allows you to do that. And with batting averages being down around the league, I mean, I see people winning their league average category with like 256, 258 right now. The average is just down. It's very noticeable. Urshela could actually boost your average right now. He's batting around 270. He's been a 300 hitter in the past. Don't think he gets back there, but a guy that plays every day will put up some counting stats here or there, boost your average and maximize those at bats, really can't be ignored. He might not play every week or every roster period for you, but it's always good to have those guys so you can kind of plug and play when needed.
Yep, 100%. I agree, and that's similar to Wilmer Flores, who is, you know, probably not quite what he was at one time. It's taken a step back, but he can play all over the field. Right now, he is the near everyday first baseman after, I'm drawing a blank.
Lamonte Wade.
Wade, yes. Wade went to the IL, so we have Wilmer Flores playing first base nearly every day, definitely against the lefties. We did mention earlier San Francisco has a couple of lefties at least coming up this week. We'll see him against most righties as well right now. And, you know, he was slumping a little bit, had the big grand slam this week. That could get him going, but he's never horrible. Similar to what you're saying about Urshela, consistency, that consistency you like, and it seems like he's always available to us when we need him. Only 18% rostered in main events, 5% in the 12 teamers. Your Gio Urshela, 1% rostered in the 12 team leagues. These guys are out there if you need them. Let's go pitching. We mentioned earlier, Lou, it's been weird. Offense is down. League ERA is down. So pitching has been great. But there's some big buts. One, it's been some of the elite superstars getting blown up once in a while. And we have we have pitchers performing very, very well that just aren't getting us the wins. A couple of weeks ago, I posted that I was in a couple of leagues where I was leading in ERA, whip, and strikeouts, which means I was getting my innings. In fact, I think I was first in innings pitched, dead last in wins. And that just seems like it should not be possible, Lou.
It really shouldn't be. And that's why sometimes wins is such a frustrating category. I know it has to be there. And I honestly still like it more than quality starts, because who goes six innings anymore, right? I mean, move it to the five innings, two earned runs, then maybe I would like it more. But wins is still an important category. It's just so hard to predict. And that's why I say, like back in our conversation about Povich with the Orioles, he's on a good team. Right. Pitchers on good teams, even if they don't have the best of ratios, get wins.
So wins and strikeouts. Who do you like for this coming week?
So one guy I like, and it's not as much about the strikeouts as it is the wins, but Albert Suarez with the Orioles. I know he's been continuously seeing that rostership rise because he does have such great ratios and pitches for an elite team in the Orioles and has that chance to pick up wins, but Dean Kramer remains out. And Suarez continues to lock up a spot in that Orioles rotation. So I'm in. If he's out there, I'm going to pick him up. I'll try to pick up those wins as long as I possibly can.
In weekly lineup leagues, are you throwing him out there versus Atlanta, who, as we mentioned earlier, not as scary as we thought they would be coming into the season, but then the team that has taken their spot of being the scary lineup to avoid for his second start of the week, Philadelphia Phillies.
See, that's the concern, is the Phillies. That Phillies start is a concern, because not only are they a great lineup, but it's not a team I can necessarily say the Orioles are better than. So that could hurt with the win as well. See, with Atlanta, the way that they're playing, they're not bad. But I think the Orioles are the better team. Even if Suarez gives up three earned runs over five innings, ratios won't be good. I think the Orioles can outscore and get them a win. Against Philadelphia, not so sure. So that situation where maybe I'm going to take the pass, but I still want him on my roster, even if he's not in my starting lineup.
Absolutely. And I think it makes a good buying opportunity. He is available in a main event league or two, even in the 15 teamers. He is not 100% rostered. Close. But
it's the lack of strikeouts. That's why.
Yeah. But he's available in 2/3 of the 12 teamers. And this is the type of player that he's going to be cheap this week. People aren't going to be interested due to those matchups. So if you have the room on your roster, that's the kind of guy I'd pick up this week cheaply, because he'll be more expensive next week, I'm certain. I got a couple of guys here. I've been listing multiple starting pitchers because so many of them are highly rostered that you can check around and try to hope that one of these guys is available. It's ugly in 15-team leagues, Lou, as I'm sure you know. Kenta Maeda. Now, I haven't seen anything more after his two-pitch outing on Wednesday yet. I haven't heard any more from the team. He is still listed on roster resource as a starter this coming week, but he did only throw two pitches, kind of reached for his side, his oblique area, and they said at the time it was very precautionary. But definitely something to monitor and try to get more info before picking him up. Simeon Woods Richardson, his teammate, nearly universally rostered in 15 teamers, but available in over half of 12 teamers. Spencer Arrighetti, similar, almost universally rostered in 15s, but only 28% of 12s. My guy, JP Sears, we've talked about him nearly every week on this show, Lou, starting in the offseason when Kyle Bland joined us. And I've been a big JP Sears fan, and he's only rostered
in Dynasty?
In 12-team leagues.
You want Sears in Dynasty? I have him. I have him, and I don't need him.
You have them and you don't need them. What's really encouraging to me, and Oakland in general, I think has won more games than a lot of us expected. They're near the league leaders in home runs. So JP Sears does actually have four wins. And that my concern for a pitcher for the Oakland Athletics, obviously, is going to be that win category. But he's on pace to get us to double digits. And that's what we're looking for. The guy that is available universally, 15s and 12s. We saw him perform pretty well earlier in the season. Looks like we are going to see Rodri Munoz again for Miami. We'll get to see him versus Cleveland on Saturday. And depending on how that start goes, I'd be very interested if we become more certain that we're going to see him again next weekend at Washington. I'd love to have him for that start, unless he gets just completely blown up by Cleveland this weekend.
Yeah, Munoz is super interesting and definitely going to base some of my decision on what he does against the Guardians, considering the Guardians are surprising us and hitting really well this year, one of the best offenses in the league. But if you look at the surface, the overall results for Munoz don't look good. But if you dig deeper, his first two starts were really good, and he's got great strikeout stuff. It's the rough start against the Dodgers that is really inflating everything. Take away the Dodgers start, and this guy looks awesome. So I am interested in him, and hopefully he will make another start in the rotation, because I would look to add him, especially in leagues where you might be middle of the pack in strikeouts, because – he should be able to rack him up for you.
Yep, absolutely. He's not the only one out there that looks good when they're facing teams other than the Dodgers. I love
right?
it.
Definitely not.
So anybody you like where it's more of a ratios bump, whether it is a starter that's not a strikeout guy? Typically, I talk about some of our middle relievers in this category, anybody you like that can, you know, maybe not even help your ratios but protect them because you might not get a lot else out of them, anybody that fits that mold that you'd be interested in this week?
So I think in your 15 teams he's not going to be very available. The odd 15 team I have seen him available, simply because the saves when he's gone them have been inconsistent, and there's a lot of pitchers in this bullpen. It's the Phillies, and it's Jeff Hoffman. Great ratios. And he's not the closer in Philly, but that's why he is available where he's available. I think he's their most reliable relief pitcher, though, and does get the occasional save chance, which is, of course, the added bonus. He's the type of player that I love in the weekly leagues, though, because you put him in the lineup, keeps the ratios down, gets you some strikeouts, and if he picks up a save, you're just like, yes, like, you're so happy. You're pumped because saves, of course, always hard to come by. And I have some leagues where I waited on the closers, and I really need whatever saves I can get. I took shots. I was like, oh, maybe Yuki Matsui or David Robertson will close to their teams. Nuh-uh. So, you know, I've spent a lot of fab already on guys, and Jeff Hoffman is one of those dudes that you can kind of put in there. You know you're going to keep those ratios down. You know you're going to get some strikeouts. You'll pick up some wins because the Phillies can score late and come back in games, break games open. And you can get some save opportunities as well.
Yep, absolutely. He's the type of guy that is exactly the type of guy I was talking about that I like throwing in there. Most of my teams, especially the 15-team teams, I don't have a seventh or even sixth starter that I'd rather have in my lineup over guys like Jeff Hoffman, like Brian Abreu start the season. His ratios were actually pretty rough looking to start the season. Definitely not what we expected. He's performing well again. And these guys are cheap. The guys in these situations, Lou, I like to say, this is where I use my waterfall the most, because so many of these guys are similar and there's so many of them available. You can put a couple of dollars down the line and whichever one you end up with, you can be happy. How about saves? You talked about Jeff Hoffman getting us a few saves here and there, but being inconsistent. And unfortunately, I'm in that spot too, where he is like my second closer on teams, and it's kind of rough. I'm falling behind. But anybody that after last season being very stable, we have seen more movement this year in the closers, but it seems like over the past couple of weeks, things have kind of settled down. But are there any opportunities you see out there for adding saves to our lineups?
Definitely. And it might be very short-lived, but Ryan Stanek getting save ops right now in Seattle, and I want to say as well I can get them. Seems like the perfect guy for you in your situation with Hoffman as your second closer.
100%.
Even if you only get four or five saves over 2.5 to 3 weeks, you'll take him, right? He strikes out more than the batter per inning. A few wins on the season, solid ratios. You want ERA to be a little lower, but he's not an elite closer. So you'll take something in the mid-threes. The whip is good, but it's all about the saves. Even if he has a 4.5 ERA during the time he's closer, if he can get 5 or 6 opportunities and convert 4 or 5 of those opportunities, you're feeling very good about it.
100%. Similar to Daniel Hudson 2 or 3 weeks ago, we knew it would be short-lived. Get what you can. I've gotten to the point, Lou, where I try to draft so that I have 2 closers. So I only have to start 2 relievers. Now, many times by choice, I will start a 3rd or 4th one, as we just talked about in the previous category, but I don't want to have to usually. But some of these guys that we know are going to get some saves, but not all of them. And we have no idea how many. I've kind of evolved to the point that if those guys are available, get them in my lineup. Get those saves when you can, because you don't know when you will be able to again. If you can bank some saves, bank the saves.
100%. And that's why there's a guy who is not going to get saves right now. Purely a speculative guy, Kevin. But AJ Puck. Everyone knows him. Everyone loves him or hates him. Depending on where you sit, it doesn't matter. Right now, you should be interested in adding him. Again, purely speculative. But the Marlins almost guaranteed to be moving Tanner Scott at some point in the coming months, maybe coming weeks. Closer's job in Miami, going to be wide open. AJ Puck, probably the leading candidate for that spot when that happens. So I want to add him now. I don't want to wait till there's a lot more rumors about Scott. I don't want to wait till Scott is traded. I don't want to wait till Scott's traded and the Marlins name pop the closer. I want to scoop him up for 5 now rather than 100 or 120 in a few weeks.
Absolutely. 100%. Couldn't agree more. You had him listed as a wild card, which is typically our spec ads that we list here on the show. And we know that they've told us that he's going to stay in the bullpen, and we know he was getting saves when Tanner Scott was struggling in the past. And so I don't know that anybody disagrees with he would be the guy if and when Tanner Scott is moved. I've been holding Aroldis Chapman in leagues for the entire season in a case or two. Bednar hasn't been himself. He's getting the saves, but he's given up a lot of runs. So I've just been holding Chapman, and then we've been saying this is the 3rd season now that we may see Bednar moved at the deadline. So guys like that, absolutely. Also, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We're getting to the point, we're only about a month from the All-Star game. That's when we expect to see Devin Williams. It's been 3 weeks since he started playing catch, and we haven't heard any other news. I'm taking that as no news is good news, and I am continuing to expect him back around the All-Star break. We're getting down to 4 to 5 weeks. I can stomach stashing a guy with that potential for 4 to 5 weeks on teams where I'm not completely demolished by injuries.
On the flip side, would you consider selling high on Medjel? I still never know how to pronounce that properly, but you know who I'm talking about. He's getting the saves right now. he could be out of a job in a month or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And if you're missing something,
you're not getting anything for him.
So you can sell him right now.
Performing well in saves, and maybe, you know, as hard as they are to find, sometimes we're really lucky and we end up having three good closers on a team. Start trying to move him now, because each passing week, he's going to get you less back.
You can sell him right now, because you can sell the fact that you still have at least 5 weeks, and maybe Williams will have a setback. We don't know. It's possible.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Lou, I think that's, especially with all that news and notes section, we've talked about plenty of guys for this week to give some people some ideas. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go? Any additional advice or tips as we're heading into, I believe, our 12th fab week of the season already?
Yeah, I think it's week 12. Pretty crazy. It just flies by. There's nothing new. I just want to maybe stress another few things. Don't go crazy on guys that you feel may or may not stick in the big leagues. When they get called up, everyone gets excited. Everyone jumps to add them. Most of the time, unless they're like the top prospect, the top of the top, they get sent back down eventually, and you get hurt. It almost happened to me with Pete Crow Armstrong. I got lucky that they called him back up. It happens. So be smart with your fab. You're going to need it later in the season. I always try to have at least 450, maybe even 500 post All-Star break. That's kind of my goal.
Couldn't agree more. I will be the team in every league I'm in that can go $2 per player I want the last couple of weeks of the season. I always will have that available. I think this year we're seeing a trend to more and more people are conserving their fab. I think in main events, the average spending at this point is down over $100 per team on average. So we're seeing more and more of that. But Jason Dominguez is coming. Well, there'll be a couple of other guys coming. People are going to blow it, and I will be able to go $2 on any player I want the last couple of weeks of the season, because most people can't.
Yeah, and honestly, the only big expenditure I've made this year was Hector Neris in a couple of places, because I knew he was the guy. Once Asley lost the job, I was confident, and I had no saves or a very minimal amount of saves. So I went 120, probably too much. The next highest was like 85 or 90, but I had seen what other guys had gone for. Yeah, it's not bad, but it's a high number compared to what I've been spending for the most part. So that was my high one. But there's certain guys or certain situations where you need to. Neris is purely a saves guy. I'm not looking at anything else. It's a category that if I'm in the bottom of my league in, I'm going to finish third or fourth based on my team right now. If I can win the category, I can win the league. So it's worth spending. Spend smart. Spend based on your team needs, not on your wants necessarily either. Needs over wants.
Yep. And something Ariel Cohen brings up often, the later you get in the season, the more risks you can take if you are mid-pack and need to make a move. The risk tolerance definitely goes up as the season goes on.
It certainly does. And you can actually see people lose leagues in the last couple weeks because they don't have enough fab. Things are really close and you need to make a move. You start getting outbid on players that you want or you need. And I've been the type of person, maybe people would think I'm a little bit of an ass, pardon my language for doing it, but I'll bid on someone that I don't need to block someone from getting that player just because I have the fab. I know this guy needs saves. This is the one guy who could help him. I'm going to spend more than I need to make sure I get him so this guy can't catch me in saves.
Absolutely. If you have the room, anything that helps your team, and it might be by
blocking somebody sure else.
That player doesn't help another team. 100%. Lou, thank you so much, man. It is great to have you here. Great to talk to you. I know we've been DMing a little bit, but I hadn't seen you in quite some time. Maybe since last time either you were here or I joined you on a show.
Yeah, I think so, man. It's definitely awesome. Been a minute.
Yeah. So thank you so much. Definitely need to have you on one of these days when Adam is here. Maybe he can get us to disagree on something. That's going to wrap it up for episode 167 on the Wire. You can follow me at Hastings Kevin. Lou is at Landers Talks. You can find Adam at 80 Grade, all spelled out. And of course, you can follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. After all that, I am Kevin Hastings. On behalf of Adam, who will be back next week, thank you for listening, and we bid you goodbye.